So changing their identity is the only thing that will create a forever change. Because have you ever loved somebody and had them actually change for the moment and feel good about themselves only for tomorrow for them to forget how deeply loved they are? They must develop the belief structure that who they are is more than anything that they could ever face in their life. That who they are is truly significant. Not in an egotistical way, in a way where they give themselves significance. That who they are is not only lovable, but someone they love. When that transformation happens in a person's identity, life is never the same again. We've got to get it so that they really have an experience of loving themselves. We got to get them to really feel like they're growing. Got to get them to really feel like they truly are contributing and that they got a way to do that in the future. But it's got to be something that's inside, not context dependent upon being here. Because otherwise, they'll have all those feelings while they're here and then they'll go home to another environment only to go back to where they were. So we said if we're here to help them celebrate life and help transform their life, we've got to change their identity. So the question is, what shapes a person's identity? Their beliefs, their physiology, their language, what they focus on, basically their triad, right? Physiology, and we put our language patterns, and we put focus slash beliefs. What else shapes their identity? Their references. So the question is, if you wanted to change somebody's identity, how would you do it? Do you agree, by the way? How many of you have experienced a transformation in your identity over the years in your association with what we do together? Say, aye. And that's why the changes have lasted. And where the changes have not lasted for you is where you did not shift your identity. It's one thing to stop smoking in your mind for the moment, and you're still counting the days. I'm on day 17. And it's another thing to become a non-smoker, in which case there is zero temptation to smoke because it's not who you are. And until you shift identity, there is always a fight. There is always a battle. When there's a shift in identity, then it's no difficulty whatsoever. Does anybody know why before I answer the question how to change it? Why is it that when we shift identity, it becomes a permanent thing? The answer is this, and if you don't know it, you should write it down. The strongest force in the human psyche, the strongest force in the human being, is the need to remain consistent with our own definition of ourselves, our identity. So once I decide that's who I am as a person, not that's what I do, but it's who I am, then I have no choice but to find a way to be consistent with that perception of myself. Because it is the basis of certainty, which is a survival mechanism with anybody. If you don't know who you are, you wouldn't know what to believe. You don't know who you are, you don't know what to believe, you wouldn't know what to do. You wouldn't be able to function. That's why when we say someone's having an identity crisis, they don't seem to be functioning with squat because they can't figure anything out because they're not sure who they are. So what most of us do is we settle for an identity that is less than our true capability because at least we can codify it. We can look at it. We can see it, and we're not disappointed by it. So our job is to help them to raise that identity because once it's who you are, you will behave that way, period. So our job is to get to the point where somebody believes that. So if identity then controls how we think, it controls what we feel. See, if your identity is you would never, let's say your identity is you're a loving, caring person, and I said, I want you to take this gun and I want you to go back there and shoot John. You won't even consider it. But if you think that your job in life is to take out all bad things, including bad people, and I say, take this gun and go shoot him, you're more than willing to consider it. You might even do it. I mean, your identity defines the entire game of your life, what you're willing to consider, what you're willing to do, what you're willing not to do, how you dress. Right? Whether you dress, you know, all those things are shaped by that sense of identity. The way you're going to deal with stress, the way you're going to deal with disappointment, is all shaped by your identity. So then the question is, if we want to build an identity, we got to have some targets. The targets of the identity we want to create are an identity that within itself gives a person utter certainty that they can meet these six needs on a consistent basis no matter what happens in the environment. You know, I shared some of you years ago, I was in business with Harvey and Marilyn Diamond, some of you know, who wrote a book years ago, you may recall, called Fit for Life. They came to me when I was a really young kid. I think I was like 20 years old at the time, 21, something in that range. And when they came to me, they wanted me to help them build this thing, and I helped them build this thing. And then as time went by, people looked for ways to feel a sense that they're growing. They looked for a way to feel like they're contributing. And they also looked for the mystery. Everybody loves the mystery, because what need does mystery meet? Variety, uncertainty. So out of the looking for that greater sense of meaning, rather than finding in the moment, we tend to look outside ourselves from some artificial stimulation. And so Harvey and Marilyn were always, they were doing the kick of the week, you know, it was something new constantly. And I was this 21-year-old kid trying to figure out how to manage these two people because I was building a real business, my first real business I had built on my own. And then they got involved in a particular guru, and I was not exposed to any of that stuff at that time. I wasn't terribly enthralled by it. And at one point, they wanted to go then to the ashram in India for a month, and I just saw my whole business disappearing. So I'm 21 years old, right? And I'm figuring, I got to take care of my self-interest here. So I fly to India, in which I'm going to spend a month in India. And so I get to the ashram, and I refuse to stay in the ashram. I stay across the street in condos, which are these little rooms that were kind of like the ones I started my little journey on in 400 square feet. Only they're much smaller, and I wake up in the middle of the night, and there's a lizard on my neck. Ah! And I get up to go to the bathroom, and boom, because, you know, the place you walk through is about this tall, you know. So I would brain myself three or four times a day, usually, you know, flapping into these things. And so one day, after eating, this little monk comes up to me and he goes, "Hello." He said, "I've not seen you around here before." I said, "Well, I'm across the street in the condos." He goes, "No, I haven't seen you around here during seva." I said, "What's seva?" He said, "Seva is, in order to be here, you have to do work for the guru 5 hours a day." I went, "I'm not here for the guru. I'm here to have a meeting with the guru." He said, "As long as you're here and you're going to eat here, you must do seva." I said, "I'm across the street." He said, "That's the guru's place." I was like, "All right, I'll show up for seva." And I'm walking over there, and he's explaining that you do all this work for free. I'm like, "Yeah, he saves a lot of money." You know? So I go in there, right, and I sign up for seva. I go to the work detail. And I show up at the work detail, and they look at me, "Oh, big young man, strong. You can lift furniture." And I'm like, "Oh, no, I can't lift furniture. I have a bad back." You know, I go through this whole story, right? Now, when I was growing up, I did everything. I cooked, I cleaned, I went and did the grocery shopping every day. I did all, every single day of my life. All that stuff I dealt with, but one thing I hated more than anything else, because when I was done with all that, I still had to wash the dishes. And that was the threshold for me, because I missed out on so many things I was doing the dishes. I just hated it. I swore someday I'd make enough money to buy a dishwasher or a person, one of the two, to be able to do this. Right? And so sure enough, after I tell him I can't do this, he goes, "There's only one other job that's available." He said, "So it's a job you must do, dishwashing." So now here I am. I have to report for 5 hours of dishwashing a day, 6 days a week, for 3 weeks. Right? I arrived there at the first day. At that point, I was such a fanatic about my living health principles. I was like, I couldn't stand it, but he wasn't doing it. And while we were there, I was standing in all the waste that they dumped in the water. It was about this high of milk solids that were there, right? They were putrefying and mildewing. And I'm sitting here in this stuff, in this smell, washing these dishes, thinking I'm going to be here for 5 hours a day for the next 3 weeks. And I had really colorful descriptions for the guru at this stage, right? And so I'm doing this thing, and I'm so mad inside. I got the most prolific question-answering process going on in my head you can imagine. And then at some point, I hit threshold, and I realized I wasn't willing to experience this pain anymore. I just wasn't willing to. And I thought, you know what? Who am I? Identity. I want to be here. I'm the best dishwasher you can ever see. And I start washing the dishes, man, as fast as I can, as clean as I could, stacking them up, trying to get these other guys to raise their standards. They were all hanging out, you know, recovering from the day's meditation, I guess. So I was like, no. I became nuclear visual in my cleaning of these dishes, right? You know, boom, boom, boom. And this guy's stacking up. Come on, come on, come on. We're going to do this. It's going to be the best dish. And I get him laughing and moving. And pretty soon it's like I Love Lucy with a chocolate thing coming by. And I had the best time. And by the end of the 5 hours, I was laughing and I was singing and I was having so much fun. And within a couple of days, I wake up in the morning and I couldn't wait to go wash dishes. And I'm not exaggerating. And I went, wow, maybe that's enlightenment. Maybe enlightenment is when you take the things you hate and learn to absolutely love them, and then life really is a celebration. Maybe then we don't have any part of us that's in conflict with us. And maybe then we really will feel free, physically and mentally and emotionally and spiritually. Maybe then we'll have more of us to connect with another human being and be able to have the kind of relationship we want as well. Because maybe we have fewer rules and more joy. And so by the time I sat down with the guru, I had a lot less rules about how to deal with things. And I talked to him about what I thought, and he agreed with me, and he talked to him and said, do this. And since they listened to him as an external frame of reference, they did what he said. And we moved on into the things. And he died about 5 days later. His name was Muktananda. And I had this private darshan with him, which I really cherish to this day, spiritually. And the love that he had was just so extraordinary. He healed people with his love. There was all the mythology around it, but he just healed people well. They felt unconditionally loved by him. They felt significance in his presence, and they began to discover their own eternal significance and their connection to eternal love. But it took washing some dishes to do it. And the reason I bring this up is leadership means you serve. To serve means you do the things you don't want to do, but you don't just do it gritting your teeth. You do it with joy. So serving can be your transformation if you don't just do it because you have to or do it because it's expected or do it because it's peer pressure, but you do it because it's joyful. And I really believe that that state you're in is what will transform them anyway. So I want you to really think about leadership from that perspective, serving and enjoying the service.